Okay, so lesson seven. Let me start with a prayer. Father, we thank you for this new day. We thank you for spring, for the reminder that life is always there, that you are always providing us with everything we need. Lord, I pray that today we would have ears to hear what you have to tell us, that you would soften our hearts toward whatever it is that we are resistant towards. Father, I pray most of all that we would receive the gifts you have for us in this day, and might you be glorified because we are receivers. In Jesus' name, amen. So we talked about the fact that if you had a gift of someone coming in to do your cleaning and cooking, some of you would enjoy that and use it to build relationships or see things, were the two things that I heard. Others of you would feel like you had no purpose, that would be difficult for you to perhaps accept that in your house and in your life. I have two things out here. I know this is an odd selection out here, but I began to think about all of this, about what happens to gifts that we get that we don't appreciate. So I have two things out here that I received as gifts. This I received for a wedding gift. And it's an odd gift. Now remember, this is 31 years ago. I was 22 years old. And this is what I get from the richest people that came to our wedding. Well, it's interesting because it's a pewter bowl and fork and spoon. At the time, I'm thinking, what is this? I didn't realize at the time that pewter was so expensive. I had no idea. I mean, I was 22, and I did not grow up in an affluent family. So on top of that, I kept thinking, why did they give us this? I bet you know this. Do you know this? It is. And I'm thinking it's actually from Norway. Why? I mean, it just doesn't make sense. And then I thought, you know what? They actually really thought about this. My maiden name is Parkinson. And they thought, since I was marrying a man who was very into their family heritage, being German, my maiden name is Swedish. So they thought, we'll get them something Swedish. And so they really thought about this. Of course, they had no idea that I don't even know my father. So the fact that I'm Swedish I don't even know if I am. I mean, I have a Swedish maiden name. But it was a very expensive gift, actually. But I've never used it. Maybe I have once or twice. But pewter is very soft, too, so it's banged up. It looks like it's been used. It just hasn't been. So here's a gift that was very expensive and actually thought out specifically for me. And I just don't appreciate it. It's useful. It has a lot of use. It could be useful. And I haven't used it. The other thing I have here is a handmade quilt. Not by how they do quilts now. But this is handmade. And I actually love it. I think it's beautiful. And it was made by my step-great-grandmother. And I got it before we got married. but... First of all, at that point, I did not appreciate that at all. And I never felt like there was any place I didn't want to use it. You know, it was one of those, it's a nice thing, I don't want to use it. I want to pass it down, but I don't want to use it. When you think about that, isn't that kind of ridiculous? That someone would go to all this trouble, and I don't want to use it. And I have never used it. In fact, this morning I thought, where is that? I had to search a little bit. So I think we all have gifts in our life, things that people have gifted us with thought and care and creative time that we have not appreciated for what they could be used for. We have perhaps said, oh, that's wonderful, and then put it in a closet like this. Thinking, well, I'll give it to Lisa. Well, what is that? Using it and giving it to Lisa is one thing, but just an interesting thing that we do so often with gifts that are meant to be used and are practical and valuable, and yet we go, oh, that's nice, and put them away. So, I want us to think about that as we look at this point into the sabbatical year and the Jubilee year. Because it's really the same thing. So, as we look at that, we start our very last lesson, our very last lesson in Leviticus. And so God is winding down what he's been telling the priests. Remember, this is a book for priests. And basically what he has done for the 24 chapters before this is he's been outlining the fact that he is giving them everything they need to come near to him. Everything they need. And he says, okay, I'm going to give you one last thing that will just give you this great picture of what I'm doing in restoring life to you. I'm going to give you this fantastic picture, but it's going to be more than a picture for you now. So he's given them all of the temple sacrifices, all of the sacrificial system that are all pictures. And they do them, but they're still pictures. But here now he gives them a practical experience of what he's restoring them to. And so he wraps it up with this, and I think it's an absolutely beautiful way to wrap up the book that he is saying, here's what I'm making you to be. I'm making you to be a priest. I want you to be the picture for everyone in the world of what it is to receive the restored life from me. And now I'm going to let you experience that restored life. Even now, even at that point when they were still so unknowing of how to live with God, still not even sure they wanted to, and yet he's going to allow them to experience this. And so he gives them these things as a gift. And so he starts by talking about the sabbatical year and the Jubilee year. So that's where we're going to start as well. And what he's saying is, I've given you all of these things, and I'm going to give you the experience. Now, live it. Experience it. Celebrate what I'm giving you as if this is really true. This is a gift. Use it. Enjoy it. Don't put it in a closet and say, this is a great thing God's given us. I'm going to pass it down to my children. Use it and experience what I'm giving you, so that you can actually not just experience it for yourself, but that it shines out in you, that other people go, wow, wouldn't that be cool to live like that? So we have, first of all, the sabbatical year. So the sabbatical year is, I think most of us know, once every 7 years, we have a rest for now the people, all the beasts, and the land. So the land gets to lay fallow for a year, which another thing I read in the paper this morning, somebody was talking about some place around here and they called it a fallow land. And I thought, how often do you hear that, you know, in Naperville? So the land got released from being worked. So we have a release here of man and beast for an entire year not to have to work, and the land being released from being worked for an entire year. Not only that, but debtors actually were released for a year for not paying their debt, which was only practical because if you aren't farming, you can't pay anything, right? And so for that year, nothing had to be paid. It was put off until the next year. and this sabbatical year was to start once they entered into the land. So it doesn't start in the wilderness. It comes into effect once they enter into the land. So that was the sabbatical year that they were supposed to follow once every 7 years. And then we have the Jubilee year right on top of that. So the Jubilee year is once every 50 years. And as much as we know about the number 7, that it means complete, 50 actually means the same thing, but almost a more fullness, a maturity. And there's not as many examples of 50 as there are 7 in the scriptures, but there are. 50 actually meant when a man turned 50, he was considered now wise, mature, that he actually knew stuff that he could impart to others. It's why at one point when Jesus is telling them what some of these things mean, they say, What do you know? I bet you don't even know this verse. What do you know? You're not even 50 years old. That's why they say that. So this 50 has this understanding of complete maturity. I have wisdom to give you. It's this abundance of giving that comes with the term 50 or with the number 50. The Jubilee year is akin to the Feast of Weeks. That was also 50, right? 50 days after the first fruits, because what it is the maturity and abundance of the crops that you gave at first fruits. At first fruits, it was the first thing of the crop. Pentecost, the Feast of Weeks, was now the whole crop is mature and able to give abundance. And so we have the Jubilee year following exactly the same line of thought, is it's 50 years after the first Sabbath year, first sabbatical year. So in this, we know we have the man and beast are again released for a year. But if it's the 50th year, what happened in the 49th year? It was a sabbatical year. So it would have been a sabbatical year. So this year, the Jubilee year, is the second year in a row that land is released from work, man is released from work, beasts are released from work. So it's now, with Jubilee, now you have two full years of not needing to work, the land being able to rest. The land as well is returned to its original owner. So who was the original owner? How did they determine that? Were the powerful and rich people who came into the land, were they the ones who got the best land? Yeah. Who did the deciding? Yeah, God did. If you know anything about when they came into the land, they were to roll lots, which were the way that God told them who gets what and how much. So when it says the original land goes to the original owner, it goes back to exactly what God gave them. And he gave them, he apportioned it according to the size of their tribe. And so everyone got according. Basically, it was the same rule as the manna. You remember the manna? Everybody gets according to what they need. So it was equal amongst. So if you had a family of four, you got a land that could support four, and so on. Okay, so that's the original ownership, how it goes back to that. Debtors at this point are released from all their debts. No matter what debts they have accumulated for that past 50 years, they are no longer owing anybody anything. It doesn't matter how much they owe. It's all gone. Slaves are completely released. And these are people who have sold themselves for life. They get released completely. That is if they're Israelite. Hebrew. Right. They looked at aliens as completely different. Not aliens who become part of them. Then they're treated as a Hebrew. But aliens who are who basically don't want to be in the Jewish, in the Hebrew mindset. Does that make sense? So they're people who refuse God is basically what's happening there. So slaves are released completely and they have no more obligations at all. And then what we find is because it's 50 years, every person should have been able to experience Jubilee at least once during their adult life. So everyone should have been able to experience it once. And Jubilee begins on the Day of Atonement. So somewhere between September, October, on the Day of Atonement of the 49th year, that begins. Remember, that is the civil new year, and so that's when the year of Jubilee begins. And so they have a trumpet that sounds, which is how they get the word Jubilee. Jubal, I think, did you look that up? Jubal is the first musician from Genesis. And Jubilee means to blow the horn, blow an instrument. And so we have that starting at the beginning of the civil year and the beginning of the Day of Atonement, which is very important because what happens on the Day of Atonement? What's the Day of Atonement about? Right. So everyone on that day gets their sins forgiven, right? And now Jesus said, or God says at this point, okay, let's turn around and now celebrate the year of Jubilee, which means you turn around and do the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. I've forgiven your sins, you forgive others. Mm-hmm. And so we have a passage that we all know and say, forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. That's hearkening back to this idea of Jubilee year. So it's not a transaction. It's, this is what life is. Life is forgetting debt. You get your debts forgiven. You forgive other debts. And so what we find in both the sabbatical year and the year of Jubilee is that they are times of release, of liberty, of freedom. And in liberty and release and freedom, what happens is they will have to actively trust God here. So this gives them this great opportunity to put what they believe into action. It's like us saying, oh, I believe God provides everything for me. Mm-hmm. And then not being able to celebrate the Sabbath. Because gotta make life for myself. Right? And so this puts real meat to the faith. Real meat to, do you really believe that God does this? And it's not a test, it's an opportunity. It's a, wow, let's do this now. This is going to be great. Because it is freedom to be able to do that. And we'll look at that. What are the implications then of that? But let's first look at the purpose. As always, God has a purpose for everything he does that's so overriding and so overwhelming that we can't even begin to comprehend it. But let's just look at some of the areas that it affects. First of all, ecological. Because it rests the people and the land and the beasts, it actually allows for all of those individuals to be healthier and more productive. We talked a little bit about this last week, but we know that human beings are more productive if they have one day of rest within 7 days. We know that. So now we have this 1 year of rest within 7 years. And it makes them actually a healthier people. It does the same with beasts, but for land now. Now we're adding this little extra breath to it, is the land gets healthier. What happens to land that is not ever rested? Anybody know?
All the nutrients
get sucked out. Yeah, a dust bowl. Not only a dust bowl, but if you have to irrigate, which means if you have to water at all, which they would have when they got there, what happens is the salt content becomes so much, so high, that it not only zaps out all the minerals, but it makes it poison, basically. And so when land is not rested for crops, the crops eventually are useless. You may see things growing out of it, but it has no nutrition in it. Does that have?
Do we? You know what else they do though now? In order to make it produce, they add chemicals into the land to artificially make it useful.
Which really talks about what we do with Sabbath, sabbatical, and Jubilee. In all ways. So, what God is saying is, by the way, I know how the world works, and I'm giving you a clue that it works this way. I actually know more than you because I'm actually the expert on the health of creation. And not just the land creation and the plants creation, but man and beast as well. And even how man and beast and men together interact. So not only is it healthier for the land and for man and beast, but it's healthier for the economics of how man lives. Because what it does is it interrupts the cycle of greed for people. If you think about this, if every 50 years everything reverts back to its original ownership, no one can ever accumulate so much that they get more and more and more. And if I get more and more and more of a particular piece of land, somebody else is getting less and less, right? But I can't accumulate too much because in 50 years it's not going to be mine anymore, right? So it interrupts that escalation of greed. It assures that there will always be land for everyone. And why that was so important at that point is because, first of all, they're an agricultural economy. They don't deal in coins. Coins weren't even thought about then. They did use silver and gold sometimes, but rarely. The crops, the land, was their means of economy. And if everyone was assured their land, it meant that they were assured of a way to make a living, of being productive. Without that, they could not be sure that they would make a living, and then would be destitute. Think about this. If that were to happen, then there would be some people that were poor. How would they ever get out of that poverty? Without it, they couldn't, right? But let's think about this. In society, there are all sorts of reasons why there's poverty. What are some of them? In any society.
Well, someone who's born into a low, an uneducated family.
Access to resources.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. So lack of access to resources.
And education.
Lack of education.
Right.
What else?
Lack of desire.
Lack of desire.
Mm-hmm. Lack of hope.
Lack of hope.
Mm-hmm. Really
lack of health.
Lack of health.
Oppression from another source.
Okay, oppression from another source.
Well, and part of our system that is supposed to assist, because it's no longer in the churches, it's in the government hands, primarily more so than at the church level, is not set up to help people who are using governmental assistance get back on their feet and entrench them in poverty.
Right. So it keeps them in that same place. Mm-hmm. Are there any ways that people are poor because of their own choices?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So we've got lots of different things, different ways that entrap people into poverty. And so what happens is, let's say it's by somebody's fault. Somebody's lazy. They just don't want to work, and they become poor. They lose all of their stuff. Or they're a drunkard, and they become poor because of that, and they lose all their stuff. What happens to the children and the grandchildren and the generations to come with someone who has squandered what they've been given? What would happen normally to the next generations? Well, of course, because what they have found actually in anthropology is it is rare for someone to get out of poverty by sheer means of selling their labor. Very rare, just doesn't happen a whole lot. It's very difficult to be able to sell enough labor to get yourself out of that. And so what you have is one person's mistake becomes a generation of living in poverty, right?
Well, maybe you guys could speak to Japan, right? They have a unique system, too, where you get the debt of your parents. Like, there is no forgiveness of debt when someone dies. Like, you get mortgages of your parents. You
mm-hmm.
get, there's like a
multi-generation.
Right.
But that's just because I think things are so expensive.
Mm-hmm.
The loans are 75 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so their parents paid 40 years into
right.
the loan. And do they lose the house, or do the children take on the loan and pay off the next 35 years?
Which is, again, an aspect of this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It splits the family up, because
well,
then the
sure.
husband gets promoted to Tokyo, and the wife and the kids stay with
that's
the house,
right.
and the husband goes lives in an apartment in Tokyo,
right.
and that's very common,
right.
that husbands and wives
yeah.
separately.
Hmm? Yeah. So what you see is that God is providing for the fact of not having a society, that there is this poverty that they can't get out of. There is this division of families. He's providing for an egalitarian society, a society where everyone is equal. This is how he apportioned land when they came to the land. This is what he gives that to keep. You did, huh? So we see that the sabbatical year and the Jubilee year particularly have huge implications for economy.
Jill, just quickly, in that book we read, Money, Greed, and God, uh-huh. Capitalism is the answer.
Right.
And not the problem. One thing he pointed out is, in societies where you can own land, what was the point? Just that people are less, they're not oppressed because they have that hope of land ownership and
right.
working it and
right.
getting ahead, where there are so many societies where the government owns the
right.
land.
Right. Interesting. So, economically. So, we have ecologically, economically, but we also have sociological. And that really flips into what would happen in the economy. Basically, these two, sabbatical and jubilee, assure that not there won't be ever a few that dominate the society. Because if you are able to accumulate wealth and wealth and wealth, that means somebody else is not. It means what's going to happen with the people who are accumulating wealth over and over again? They're going to get the power, right? And they are going to have power over the ones who don't have it. And so what happens then is there is an undercurrent of dissatisfaction because there's the what's happened? Now we've made two groups, right? The ones who have and the ones who have not. And there's this undercurrent of dissatisfaction, which eventually always comes out in some kind of civil strife. We see it around the world today, do we not? Not only in places in the Middle East, but even within our own country, we see that. And what happens is, it's happening under everything all the time, but like a volcano, eventually it bursts, and then we have all sorts of things that come out of that. And so God is saying again, I know how people work. I know how they feel. I know what is life for them, and I know what is not life for them. Therefore, I'm providing life for them in these two gifts that I'm giving. And of course, spiritual. What it helps to do is resist the temptation to self-idolatry. Why? Because what happens in the Jubilee year as well as the sabbatical year? What is the essential idea of resting on the Sabbath? What does that mean?
God provides.
God provides, and I'm actually recognizing that God provides. And again, if we don't have the essential understanding of Sabbath not being, I don't have to work, I can do whatever I want, but being, I don't have to work because God's calling me to play with Him. God's calling me to enjoy what He has and recognize that all of this is a gift. If that is part of the entire year, and in Jubilee, 2 years you have to spend 2 years playing with God, 2 years enjoying, wow, God, that's so cool that you made this. Wow, this is a gift for me. Then I don't have that temptation to say, by my hand have I gotten all this. I am so good and I'm so strong. And you're not, because you're lazy, right? It has this, I'm so much better than you. Obviously, if I have a lot of stuff, I'm better than you. I've done something good about it. But the Jubilee year says, oh, do you remember where you got this land? This land that you've been reverted back to? You came into the land and I gave it to you. I apportioned it right to you, specifically the exact land that I've given you. And so it really stops that very real temptation for self-idolatry, which is what happens when things get out of hand. And so, of course, it makes you as the individual have a healthier relationship with God than you wouldn't have otherwise. And so what we have then is this beautiful picture of God saying, I know more about you do than the ecology of the earth. I know more about you do than the economy of society. I know more about the sociological effects of the society, and your spiritual health of society. And so I'm making all of these healthier and better able to live the good life that I have intended them. By doing this, I'm giving you that gift. So I'm giving you gifts that are useful to you for a healthy life. I know exactly what a healthy life requires, and this is what I'm giving to you for that ability to experience it and take it in.
Well, the word that keeps coming to me is abundant life.
Yep.
Because,
yep.
Like, in some ways, God created things so that we can make life
right.
for ourselves.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And so I think this is more about, like, well, yeah, I've given you the tools to make life, but now I want you to see how to have abundant.
Right.
Abundant.
Right, exactly. And so this abundance that comes out, and that is exactly the picture of Jubilee, is this abundance, because how was it then that they were given life? How were they sustained during 2 years? Yeah. And actually, if it was a Jubilee year, 2 years ago, he provided such abundance that there's plenty for everyone to be eating. There's plenty for everyone to be seeing and doing. And I think that in our very Western minds, it's very difficult for us to even wrap around the idea of having a whole year to play with God, right? We can't do it for a day out of a week. But a whole year and then 2 years to experience the abundance, to realize it's October of the second year and I'm still eating and I've done nothing. What better experience to absolutely know for sure I've done nothing to get this. And it is a gift. And it is a joy to have all of this.
Didn't the food continue then for the next year because they still had
Correct.
To plant it and grow? And
yep. Yep, exactly. So he supplied 3 extra years when it was coming into a Jubilee. Think about that. That's amazing. And it wasn't that they had to scrimp and say, oh, we got to be careful. We got to ration out. He said, don't worry about it.
It never actually happened, though, right?
No.
Okay. You're kind of talking like it happened. I was like,
but it didn't happen because they chose
not to.
Not because God didn't provide.
Yeah. They wouldn't have had.
So they never had one. Did they have a Jubilee?
They never had one Jubilee year, ever.
They never had one?
Not one. Not one.
Well,
yeah. They never chose.
Because they were fear.
Right. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to look through what did Israel do with all of this.
Can I ask just one thing too quick? And I don't know if it's good. This is a good question for today or maybe next week. How do you do it, the Sabbath? I mean, really, I'd like to know that if someone really practices it. And how do you do it as a mom and a wife and all this stuff?
We're going to talk a little bit more about some more ideas. I'd like more ideas from you, and I'm hoping that we may not even get through the whole lesson because I want to talk a lot about that. Okay. But here's a question for you. Did anyone, after our last lesson, did anyone this Sabbath or this weekend try to practice the Sabbath? How did it go?
It was hard in a way because you're just used to doing what you do a little bit, not as much as you normally do in the week, but it was just so refreshing.
Okay. Oh, good. Excellent. Yeah. Robin, what about you?
It's something I don't do it every week forever, but, you know, it's something I've practiced for a while, so.
So it's a little
it
bit more.
Especially because it was sunny, you know.
Oh, yes. Wow. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, beautiful. Beautiful.
So what did you do? Yeah, like,
and,
like, no cooking, no.
Well, I usually throw something in the crock pot on Sunday morning, so it's just easy, you know, so it's not like no cooking, but just easy, you know. Went to church, came home, ate lunch, sat outside, played games with the kids, and then actually Sunday night we, you know, got together with Young Life leaders and worshipped and, you know,
Okay. So, and again, we talked about it's going to look different for everybody, but it is about you playing with God and not you playing for yourself. Which is how we have kind of messed that up a little, right? It's not about, in fact, there's a beautiful scripture that talks about, if on the Sabbath you refrain from doing what's your pleasure and instead join me in my pleasure. So it looks a little different. And we're going to look at that, though. what it looks like. Did you have something to say, Gretchen?
I think this past Sunday was one of the busiest Sundays I've had because I had to host. And I woke up to this distinct smell of bacon. Okay, I'm a vegetarian, and I do not like the bacon smell. In my house. And I'm thinking, what is going on? Like, we have church, and I have all these people coming over, and I walk downstairs, and Grant is fixing bacon and eggs for Abby. And there was this moment where I was about ready to come unglued because I'm thinking, are you kidding me? We never have this big breakfast before church, and it's the house looking like bacon, and all this stuff, right? Truly on God's strength, I went back upstairs, and it was like this shift. Like, I could just let it go. And I think it's that internal. Sometimes we don't always have the luxury of maybe spending the time with the Lord on the Sabbath the way we want to, because, like I said, I was hosting this ministry thing that wasn't going to happen if they were like, can you please do this? I was like, okay. But it had to become an internal attitude of, I could have been like, well, now I have some work leading, and now I'm not going to rest at all, blah, blah, blah. But more of a, like you were saying last week, an enjoyment of, or a fellowship together. Mm-hmm. And did I do it perfectly? By no means. But it was different. There was that subtle shift.
Interesting. That's a good thing to think of. I'll just tell you that I have attempted many times. It's very difficult, first of all, if you're the only one who really thinks this is important. I had more spiritual warfare than I've had in a long time. It was like everything was conspiring against me to not enjoy the Sabbath. And I had to keep going back saying, okay, so that's not going to work. I am here to enjoy what you want me to enjoy, whatever that is, because it's obviously not what I thought it was. So all that to say, it's going to take practice, which is why God says, I'm going to give it to you every week. Give it to you every week. So you practice it. It's not going to come naturally. And it's also a choice rather than I don't have the luxury to be able to do that. So it is a whole paradigm shift about that.
Can I give
you
an example?
Yeah.
With those of you that know my husband, he is one that likes to keep active and needs to be doing something, and we don't go on vacations very often because we can't always find the time, but we did go on vacation, and it was really wonderful. I actually saw him relax and enjoy just being, you know, without any agendas or anything. But it happened to be at a very bad time. It was the end of the quarter. He had to get his numbers in. And because of the economy, it's just very difficult, you know, to get the numbers. Well, anyway, long story short, he didn't get on the computer. He just did one. He had to do one thing, and that was it. But he just didn't have any agenda, didn't say, let's do this. He just kind of rolled with it, which is very unusual for him. Mm-hmm. And long story short, his numbers came in. He was the only one in the country who got his numbers. And the number was 7.7.
I like it.
He even got a call from, how the heck did you do that? You're laying on the beach. So for me, it was really a picture of what you're talking about. I don't know how it happens. It was a choice.
Yep.
It was almost like he had to crucify what he wanted to do, and so
that's cool.
I don't know.
He's acknowledging it.
That's
too.
Cool.
Yeah, and he's like, I don't.
That's cool.
You know, normally he's like looking at the computer, waiting for it, and just so God knows what we need. I mean, what can we do? I mean, we can't make things happen.
But it's something's changed in him.
Yeah, it's. I don't know. But I think I'm always in a state of rest. It's like, I almost feel guilty sometimes. But it's like, oh my gosh. We really do have to trust that God has something good for us.
Kristen, do you have something?
Oh, I was just going to say, I remember last year talking about you were going to speak at the Christmas banquet for a church, and how those ladies wanted you to talk about simplifying Christmas and stuff like that. And that just really spoke to me that you said that you more felt like it was important to enjoy, if you like to decorate, that you just enjoy that, even if you went over the top.
Right.
And it wasn't that everybody had to simplify. It was that you had peace and just joy in doing the thing.
Right.
My daughter is on travel soccer, and she has games on Sunday, and I get kind of angry. But then last week, I missed church. I'm sitting out in a bleachers in the middle of St. Louis, but I could enjoy.
Right.
We were outside, and the wind was blowing, and it was sunny, and my daughter was having fun, and you know. So I was like, I can have Sabbath doing that, even though.
Yes. And I think that is a good point. We do have these ideas that this is what Sabbath looks like. First you go to church, then you do this. Because if I don't go to church, I won't meet with God. And right? I mean, we have these really odd ideas. Because if I go to church, then I am no longer obligated to God and I can do what I like, is really what we think underneath. But there's all sorts of these blocks. But what As we get through this Jubilee year, I want us to look at the depth of what he is proposing is life for us. So basically, he's saying to them with Jubilee year, sabbatical year, I want to restore all of creation in this, and I'm going to restore it. Come along with me, celebrate the restoration of all of creation. And here's the point is, and one of the things I think we forget as Christians in the United States is God's restoration of us is not just about us. First of all, it's not just about the individual. It's about community, which means he restores community as well as restoring the earth. So it is God over all creation saying, I'm restoring this. And this is how I'm going to do it. This is how I've made it to be healthy. Let's do it together. Let's celebrate together this entire restoration. So that if I only concern myself with Sabbath as we know it, then I'm only thinking about me and God. Right? But what he does is expand to sabbatical year and Jubilee year. I'm concerned about all of creation, which means society, relationships, whole governments, earth. Do you see how much bigger this is? And you see what's happened through Leviticus is, I'm dealing with you personally, I'm dealing with you as a group of people to show, but I'm going to show you I'm dealing with everything. It's a much bigger picture than we consider. So when we look at the scripture from Genesis to Revelation, be very careful not to say, this is God's story about him and me. It's not. It's God's story about everything he has made, and he wants to bring the wholeness back for everything. And sometimes we get way too narrow and then forget the abundance that God has everywhere. So, implications. What are some of the implications then if they were to celebrate sabbatical year and Jubilee year? First of all, it would remind them of the truth. They would actually live the truth for 1 or 2 years, depending on which year it was, that all resources are a gift of God, that they weren't deserved, that they were a gift from him, and that all resources were under their care, which is what's happening then, even in the picture of Genesis, is they need to care for these, and part of the care is giving rest. It's like if you are caring for your child, do you keep them up for 24 hours? No, you give them rest, right? Because you know they need it. In fact, sometimes you force them, right, to rest. Why? Because you want your time? Hopefully not. It's because you know they need it. Occasionally it is.
They were babies.
But you know if you don't force them to rest, that it's going to be disaster for them, right? And if that happens for a long time, it will make them sick. And so you are trying to continue to keep them healthy. But also what it helps them to remember is all people are us. And this is absolutely essential. This is where it comes from is if you are celebrating Jubilee year, everyone gets to return to what God's given them. They don't get what they deserve, right? They get what God has graced them with. So do you. You don't get what you deserve. You get what God has graced you with. None of this land was yours. God gave it to you as a resource to enjoy life with. And I can't even say, at this point, if I'm celebrating Jubilee Year, I can't say my abilities have gotten me what I have. I can't say that anymore, can I? Because I'm right back to where I was at the very beginning of entering in, where my grandfather was, where my great-grandfather was, when they entered into. It was a gift. And it's this reverting back to live with this whole understanding. I mean, they couldn't avoid understanding that if they lived, if they actually celebrated sabbatical or Jubilee Year, right? Do you understand that? So it begins to help them understand that we're all the same. We all have life because it's been given to us, not because we deserve it. So it really flattens down that line of, I have what I have because I am so good. Exactly.
Do you know anything about when a Hebrew couple would get married, that they'd have a year honeymoon or something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He was given a year off of work. So to start off their life, they were not required to do the family farming or anything like that.
For a whole year.
Yeah, for a whole entire year.
And they lived with his family, right?
Right, So that's where the supply was coming from. Mm-hmm. So that's, we see this over and over again, that this is the picture God has for us. And yet it's the one picture that we avoid like the plague. Over and over and over again.
Hi. I think a lot of people, me included, I think a lot of us feel like that is so much our identity.
Yeah.
And we, because Brett takes a sabbatical, and I can't tell you how many people say things more like negative rather than positive about
yep.
it.
Yep.
You know,
yeah.
And then I do feel like I have to defend him, and you know, and then I'm not, you
yep.
know, God's mm-hmm. a defender, but I would say more people mm-hmm. make positive or negative kind of snide remarks about it mm-hmm. rather than
okay.
positive.
Our accomplishments, because in our day and age, it's our accomplishments that measure our self-worth.
Right. Okay, and what did both of you say about if you got a maid and a cook for a year?
I would feel it's an accomplishment for me if I do
that. I don't...
It would give you no purpose,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't say it would give me no purpose.
But you would feel that way, right?
Well,
no.
But
that's.
I don't feel like that's wrong, though. That's my.
But what was, and this really does get down for all of us. It's all, how all of us feel. What is God doing in giving the gift of, I'm going to supply you with everything you need. I'm going to supply you with your cook, with your household stuff, whatever you need. Does God say because you have no purpose, or God says, what your purpose is to reflect how good I am. It's to reflect
hard.
A gift. Yes.
Like with my 20-year-old,
yes.
it is really hard for him to see where I am in life without him saying to me, well, you're not a good role model. You have no purpose. You have this, or that. I mean, and that's where he is in his lack of maturity.
Yeah.
But it's like I'm hopeful for the day when he sees God's
But it is common, actually, it's how we all feel to one extent or another. Why? Because we live in a transactional world where we do feel our purpose is to work rather than to reflect
mm-hmm.
a good God.
It is hard to figure out how to take this.
We're going to get to this. What I'm trying to do is put some of these pieces together before we see the whole picture, okay?
Well, I mean, you said forever, so I
yeah.
don't know. I'm like,
uh-huh.
forever. I don't know.
But let's look at that. Let's look at this. What God is trying to get at. He's really trying to route out a lot of stuff that is just part of us. So let's look at some of the other implications. So if we say that, if we're learning and living that we don't have anything because of what we do, then we therefore cannot judge anyone else, right? And even if they lost all their wealth because they were a drunkard, they're still in the same boat as we are. What they lost was God's gift. And what they have is God's gift. And so it is with us. And so what it does is enables us to say, wow, God really is providing life for us. I can trust him with everything. If you lived for 2 years and God provided everything, what kind of a foundation would that be for the next
generation?
For the next 7 years, what would that be like?
I remember when God provided.
Yes, for two full years. Now all of a sudden, even my work looks different. Because it's not about, I got to work hard to get.
Right.
Now it's, this is a gift that I get to do something with what I have.
You do see that, right, when people, when they retire.
Hopefully.
Like a crisis
yep.
of identity.
Yep.
Like, who am I?
Yes, yes, exactly.
I guess that's kind of what I mean for purpose. I mean, that mm-hmm. this is like, God has gifted me with this family to care for. So
right.
I don't see
right.
it. I don't think I see
so,
it. Like,
so,
as
so we'll look at that. But. Is what happens is then, in celebrating Jubilee, all of a sudden what I do has a different shift. It's not where my worth comes from. It's a gift where I get to participate with God.
Well, and that's how I view
and celebrate.
Sundays is because this Sunday I did focus on trying to celebrate the Sabbath, but I still made lunch for my family, but it was
right.
a completely different view. Of,
yes. I don't have to.
Now I got to do this. Now
right.
I got to do this. It was more of a. This is.
Right.
I enjoy
right.
the company
exactly.
of my boys with me versus.
Right.
Why did you make that mess? Now I got to clean it up.
Exactly. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. Is what it does is it begins to shift. It's what Jesus was really talking about when he's picking grain. This was not work to him. This was. Wow, look at what God's provided right here.
Mm-hmm.
When he went and ate the priest's food in the temple, mm-hmm. horrid horrors, he was like, look at this. God provided food for us right here. Isn't that cool? There's a whole different idea then of what we do on Sabbath. So that should start to inform, again, how Sabbath looks. Okay, so just put those pieces in and we'll look at it again. So,
and I can give another example. I realized that a lot of my identity and my purpose was doing these things. Not that it was bad, but it was. And so when you don't have that, there's a shift in, well, what is my purpose if I'm not doing that anymore? And surely it's more than just making dinners. So I don't know. And even in that, you yield to it. And you know, and that was hard. It was a really hard thing for me. But as you yield to it, you go, there is more than. And I get it from my kids. Well, you never did anything. I'm like, wow.
Oh, I know.
It's like, wow, I didn't do anything. You know what I mean? They don't know what I did yet. But so
right.
I'm thinking, wow, did I put too much emphasis on that? And surely I have more worth than that.
Mm-hmm.
And I do.
Right. Right. It does.
Yeah.
And that's a really good. So most of you are not in that position yet, but the. When you get to be in that position, when you are empty nesters and all of a sudden you're making life for your family is not really what it's about,
it does.
It makes you pause and go, so God, what is this about?
Yeah.
Who am I? And you do get to start experiencing some of this. But let's go on. And I think we'll start to get a few more pieces in here. Implication also, it's going to require trust. And trust always initiates with humility,
mm-hmm.
right? Because I have to say, my hand did not bring this. My hand did not, I don't have what I have because of who I am. And this is difficult. This is difficult for us, but think about how much more difficult it is for our husbands, right? Because I would say that their first inclination is to say, I did it. I do have this because of what I did. And we'll look at Deuteronomy and what Deuteronomy says about that in just a second. But we do have to trust God's faithfulness, that he said, I'm giving you this as a gift. Enjoy it. Use it. Experience it. I didn't mean for you to put it in the closet and say, this is a really cool thing. I'll pass it down to my generations. Mm-hmm. Right? Like this. Mm-hmm. But it also requires trust in mutual relationships as well. Think about if you lived in the Jubilee year. I have to trust that God's going to provide for me, but I also have to trust that everyone else is going to forgive their debts, right? That they're going to move off the land that was mine, right? So this requires a huge amount of community and relationships, which means in all the years coming up to it, it means it's much more important for me to keep relationships on a short string, right? Right? Because if my neighbor has something against me and I have a debt with him, I want to make sure that that's okay, so that when Jubilee year comes, we're okay with that, that he doesn't resent me for him having to drop the debt, right? So all of a sudden, because of what's coming and what God is giving them, becomes very real and practical in the day-to-day life of how we live with one another.
Well, this kind of happened, right, in the year 2000.
Mm-hmm.
Bono got together with a bunch of economists and said we should do a year of Jubilee in the year 2000, and because a lot of these African nations have so much debt, they can't even have any programs for the people in the country. So, you know, all these economists from like Harvard and all over, they're like, yes, this is a good idea. We should do this. If you forgive their debt, then they can use all the money in their budgets to actually help their own country instead of trying to pay the rich country.
Right, right. Blah,
blah. And what ended up happening is, the Big 8 or 20 or G8 and G20 were like, okay, we'll do this. And everybody's like, are you going to do it? Are you going to do it? Like, they got so concerned.
Right.
If I do it.
Right.
And you don't do it, then you're still getting money from them. And
right.
I'm not getting money
right.
from them, even though I gave them more than you did. And that's not going to be fair. And it became this huge thing that everybody was worrying about whether someone else was going to forgive.
Right. So it requires trust in one another. Day-to-day basis. So this changes how people are living then, if they expect to celebrate both the sabbatical and Jubilee year. Yeah.
If we're looking at the book of Leviticus, we're supposed to be kind of these priests. They had no land. They were provided for.
Right.
They didn't have. So that's just like that reminder of, if that's who we're supposed to be, then we really have claim to nothing.
Right. Exactly. And remember again, the priests are the picture, and God says, the land is actually mine. It's not yours. And so here are my priests to show you. And they're completely provided for in all that way. So the trust with one another is very essential. But here's another thing I think we don't think about. What it does is eliminates double-mindedness. Because if I know that my debts are forgiven in Jubilee year, I don't have to be worrying about what has happened in the past and how I'm going to make up for what happened in the past, right? If I know God's going to provide, I don't have to think about the future. Well, I better work hard now because what's coming. All of a sudden, I don't have to worry. Because worry is, of course, thinking, when I'm here, thinking about past or future. And that means I have a double mind. I'm thinking here, but I'm here. So I'm thinking about what's going on now, but I'm also thinking about what happened or what's going to happen. With Jubilee, now I can be wholly present here and now. That looks a lot different than where we live, right? That looks completely different. Now I have a single mind. What is God getting to in restoring us? Restoring us to wholeness. And that's the wholeness. You see how this completely changes even how we begin to think. Because all of a sudden, I know God's taking care of it. Past and future. So we have a completely different way of just being and enjoying. Now, when I think about that, enjoying being with God, playing with God, is much easier, right? Because I know the past and the future have already been taken care of. And so I can just be. And how much more do you enjoy when you are fully present in the moment?
It's so interesting how the world even starts to see the value in these principles, even though they go about it without Christ, which is the wrong way. All the trends and all the training we need to go to in psychology to keep our lives and this is all about being present, being mindful, and working with our consciousness,
right.
Being in the
right.
moment and not so stuck in the past and not so anxious about the future. You know, so
and you know, it's such great advice. The problem is, if it's without Christ, then you have no ability to do that.
Absolutely.
Because you know you do have to worry about the past, and you do have to worry about the future, right?
Right?
And so you can say, I'm going to put that on hold, but you also know it's there. It's on your peripheral vision anyway.
Exactly.
Right, exactly.
That's what I'm saying. Like, without Christ, the world, it's all in vain.
But they still know, yes.
The world does try to embrace the principles
right.
that God has set in place.
And why? Because God has set eternity in our heart.
Mm-hmm.
We know deep down what is whole and healthy. And this is what God says. So even in our thinking, which I think is something we don't think about when we look at the sabbatical and the jubilee, but it also frees us to live completely joyously. So if I don't have to worry about the past or the future, I know God's providing for me right now and I have abundance. Does that not completely free us? He says in verse 10 there, proclaim liberty throughout the land. Anybody know where else we've ever seen that verse?
Yeah, that's
not Statue of Liberty, but the Liberty Bell. That's what's on the Liberty Bell. Leviticus 25:10. Yeah, that's how we founded this country. Liberty throughout the land. Freedom, completely without restraints, because God has given us the gift of life.
Does anybody see room for messing this up really bad? Knowing our humanness, what God is setting out here is perfect in the way we should live. But I can just see myself, humanness, saying, okay, I think I'm going to go into a lot of debt now because in a couple of years I'm going to
right.
not
mm-hmm.
have to worry about
yeah.
it. I'm going to get my land back.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to work so hard this year because I'm going to get provided for the next couple of years. I can
sure.
just see that this could be taken way
mm-hmm.
the wrong direction.
Mm-hmm. But if that's how you're living, then you're not actually going to really be celebrating Jubilee year because then it isn't a reception of a gift. It's more a, I took advantage of you, God.
Well, that's
well,
right.
That's life
so,
without God.
Right.
No,
exactly.
That's
exactly.
But the scripture kept saying, do not take advantage. I mean,
yep.
this translation
yep.
underlined, do not
right.
take advantage.
Right. Of anyone, including God.
But don't you think people would?
Oh, well, absolutely.
Yeah,
I mean, actually, we're going to look at this, how they did. Yes, absolutely. But remember what God's doing in Leviticus. He's saying to them, you once had a good life. I originally intended for you to have the good life of Eden. You decide you didn't want it, but I still know that that's what is good for you, and I'm offering it to you again. So I'm going to restore it, and I'm going to restore it little by little, and I'm going to give you experience in it. So this is a gift you can choose to take or not. Again, it's going to come down to you get to choose it. You don't want it? Fine. You want to take it and manipulate it the way you want to use it? Fine. You'll get what you manipulate out of.
Mm-hmm.
You'll get what you want. But I'm giving you this gift. It's like this. These are great gifts, and you know I so appreciate them. But do I really? No, I don't. I put them back into a closet, and that's where they're going to go as soon as you're gone. They're going to go back into a closet. I don't appreciate them. And so I don't get out of them what the actual gift was meant for.
Okay, that was another thing about our vacation. We didn't pay for it. It was a gift. My family said, would you like to use this? It was out of the blue, and I could have gone, oh, yeah, you know, oh, no, thank you. No, I don't want it. Or I could have expected it, like next year, think, I wonder how I can manipulate my brother so that I can stay. It was
right.
so appreciated, and I think that's what
where the heart comes in,
yep.
only God
yep.
knows. Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh, this is really a gift. Thank you, God. We didn't deserve this. It was out of the kindness and the generosity of. So I looked at it from the hand of God,
mm-hmm.
and I don't expect it next year.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
I mean, you can appreciate that kind of gift more if you're working hard. I mean,
mm-hmm.
if you're just kind of lazing around most of
yeah.
the week anyway, then a Sabbath, what's the big deal?
Yeah.
If you're working really hard,
mm-hmm.
then, oh, that Sabbath is a gift.
Yeah.
Right? Because
mm-hmm.
it's like, oh, okay, break. And same with work. I mean, they're working 6 years, and
yeah.
they're working
right.
hard.
Right,
mm-hmm.
right.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, the flip side is when you actually celebrate the Jubilee for what it is, you then look at work as a gift rather than
yeah.
an obligation. And so now your whole world is turned upside down from what we know and live.
Because
so,
they did work in the garden.
Right, absolutely,
yeah.
absolutely.
You know, with the opening question, I mean, when you said work as a gift, the immediate thought that popped into my head is my aunt, who is pretty well-to-do and has people do everything for her.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not how I remember her growing up. But I feel like she's gone so soft. Like, she's almost feels incapable of doing anything. And I just thought it actually was a gift for her to be able to do work.
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean? Because now,
right.
like, she literally can't visit me because she doesn't feel capable of
driving right.
from there to here and different things. And I just feel like that incapability was fed by the fact that she didn't have to do anything anymore
right.
that made her feel
right.
like she could accomplish things.
And
what I was wondering is if this Sabbath was a reminder to the rich to what it's like to work. Because
right.
they didn't have their slaves anymore.
Right.
Like, make their clothes
right.
and eat their food and
right.
you know, whatever.
Right.
Interesting.
Exactly. Oh, exactly.
Great. I had said that my daughter is on this travel team, so she played soccer for like 6 days last week. Very busy, all through the week, and she's supposed to have another practice Monday. And I said to her after school, do you need a day off? Because I'm thinking about Sabbath. Do you need a break? Oh, I do. So she stayed home, but after dinner, do you know what she did? She went in the backyard with her brother and played soccer, and she kicked the ball around. But it was
but
joy.
Yes,
joy.
Then it, right, it was
and
not
you know,
an obligation
so
any longer.
Her,
yes.
I was trying to give her a Sabbath
yes.
because I'm like being
right.
mindful of this. But what did she do? But go out and play and had fun.
But,
and,
what, but she played with her brother.
And she played with her brother,
right.
yeah.
Which is another thing that came up is, you said, what it helped you to do is to really build
mm-hmm.
deep relationships. So think about these 2 years in a row. They don't have to work the land. They don't have to work with their beasts. They get 2 years to develop relationships. How deep are those relationships going to be? Believe me, you're not just sitting drinking coffee. You are enjoying one another in all aspects of life and beginning to see the gift of the differences in each other. So there's lots and deep things that are going on within these 2 years.
And some countries are better about this. I've seen people come from the Middle East who are used to relationship being built
oh,
into their
yeah.
day.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And really depressed here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really,
very.
Really depressed because there isn't that room for relationship. There
well,
isn't
the Latin
kind of
American
rest.
Community.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
yeah.
And it becomes difficult then because we're like, are you kidding me? You want to sit and sit for 8 hours and just talk? And so the refugees we've had, that's been really tough. And particularly for Lissa, they're like, well, what do you mean you don't have time to be with me? You know, even a relationship girl, and she doesn't have time. So the two worlds collide, and it's
right.
kind of ugly sometimes.
I love, too, though, being in relationship and working alongside of someone. So, I mean, I think that's...
And that is a tremendous thing because then it isn't an obligation anymore, right?
Yeah.
Then it is, and that's
and
part
of... about making your work enjoyable.
Right, and
know?
So it becomes... And so what's happening is he's giving them opportunity to have these relationships so that when they go back to work, now it's communal work. Now it's encouraging work. Now work is not what we consider laborious work, right? Because in the Garden of Eden, Adam worked,
mm-hmm.
but it wasn't toil. That was the curse,
mm-hmm.
right?
Well, and in the new heaven and the new earth.
Right.
I mean, that's the thing that people talk about.
Right.
Heaven, and you look at this
right.
message about it.
Yes.
People are working.
Right, exactly.
People are
exactly.
working.
With great joy.
Yeah.
Yes, with great joy.
Mm-hmm.
So, And I knew that this is where we would kind of just dig in. So don't worry, we're not going to finish. What it gives also is the ability to start over again, no matter what, complete and fresh. Now, most of you know my very favorite movie is Anne of Green Gables. I mean, we could watch it over and over again. I could. It's like 8 hours long, and you know, I have all the discs. But one of the lines that the teacher gives, so Anne makes a mistake every single day. She's just, as you know, is this new girl on Green Gables. Does everyone know the story?
Yeah, we watched it.
Oh yeah, that's right, we did. I used it. Miss Stacy, her first like encourager, her teacher, says to her one day, Anne, you have to look at each new day as if it's a new day with no mistakes in it. And this is what Jubilee's all about. No matter what has happened in the past, I have a brand new start. No matter what has happened in the 49 years I've had, I have a new start. No matter what happened in the past 7 years, I have a new start. And therefore, whatever has happened in the past week, I have a new start. It's this brand new start of there's no debts here. There's no obligations here. It's, wow, and now I go into the work week or the work year with a completely different attitude, right? So all of a sudden, things are transforming in me that I never thought. So it wasn't just about that external rest. It's becoming much deeper and deeper as we actually experience this. And what we also realize is that because our destiny then is definitely in God's hand and not our own, it means that my mistakes or other people's mistakes can't control what's going on in my life. Then I understand that. That's the truth. And yet, we don't understand that because we don't live in a Jubilee year. So all of a sudden, if that's true and I've lived that and understand that truth, I am now completely free to forgive and love and restore relationships. Because I know that whatever they've done doesn't affect my getting life. Does that make sense? Because this is actually one of those really deep-seated what God is really getting to. Because he's restoring relationships in the very core of it all. And doing it in a way that we would never have thought unless we're actually experiencing Jubilee. So here's the big picture. Jubilee is actually the practical experience of receiving the very good of Eden that God's restoring us to. So a Jubilee year is actually living within that realm of God's kingdom the entire year. The sabbatical years are actually a rehearsal for the Jubilee year of being able to really take in the very good life that God has for it. And yet it's on a less intense scale. And then, of course, Sabbath then is a bite-sized opportunity to be able to live this. And so what we see is Sabbath and sabbatical year and Jubilee year, God ordained for us each for a specific length of time and in a specific order so that what they would experience is a little bit of the very good life of what it was like to live completely free on Sabbaths once a week. And then he gave them a whole stretch of a sabbatical year every 7 years. They got to experience a whole year of it. And then every 50 years, once in their lifetime, they got to experience this absolute, I have no debt, I am completely free. And so what you see is he's building little by little. And why does he have to do it this way? Because he's weaning us. How do you wean a child off of the breast? I mean, you don't say, all right, tomorrow morning, no more. That's it. You're eating solid food, right? You don't. Little by little, right? Whenever we wean anything, anybody off of anything, we give them little bite-sized pieces and then more and then more. And that's what God is doing with Sabbath, then sabbatical year and Jubilee year. He's giving them bite-sized pieces because he's weaning them off of a transactional life. You're so used to this. It's going to be tough for you to start taking. You're not going to be able to digest it all. So I'm going to give you a little piece and a little piece and then a bigger piece and a little bit deeper and then a bigger piece and really deep. That makes sense? So that's pretty much what he's doing here. So if that's the case then, now that I know what sabbatical year looks like and Jubilee year looks like, how then does it color my Sabbath? If Sabbath is a practice of Jubilee year, then how does it then I bring all of that in and say, so what if I celebrated Sabbath as a practice for Jubilee? So that all of the things about Jubilee occur on Sabbath day. Now, this is going to change how I actually live throughout the week.
I just think as far as relationships, you'd be working to make sure all the slips are.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it wouldn't be this obligation. It would be, I'm looking forward to Sabbath where everything is that I can do. Debts are all forgiven. So, and that's what we're going to look at within the last half hours. We're going to really look at how does that, then what are we going to be looking at doing in Sabbath? What is it going to look like beyond the physical activity? What's it going to look like deeper in here?
I think it's helpful to me, too. You mentioned earlier that it's not about feeding myself, but about participating with God.
Right.
So it's not all about mom getting her Sunday nap.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
It's
a much bigger picture. Yes.
And I had to laugh. My daughter's in college studying youth ministry, and one of her assignments was to make a calendar for your activities and the meetings and everything. She says, well, you know, a youth minister would work on Sunday, so you have to schedule a different time to have the Sabbath. And she was, you know, trying to plug in all these days and figure out when would that Sabbath happen. And she says, you know, Mom, I think I'm going to do that. And I said, you mean the assignment? She says, no, Sabbath. A whole day when I don't do anything. And I'm thinking, oh, what's the last thing this particular child needs? Because how's that different from any other day? But, you know, I needed those words to say, you know, it's not about feeding yourself.
Right, right. It's about receiving what God has, which means God has relationship, community, earth care, all of this. So we look at this. Now, I have, I'm going to skip over the next two parts, which is chapter 26 and 27, because I know we don't have time. If we have any time, we might go back to those. They're important. It's really God summing it up. So I'm giving you this experience. You got a choice. You want to take it or not. And you might even be so overwhelmed with it, with joy, that you might want to give me your life over it. So that's really the last two chapters there. But I really think that getting at least some of this Jubilee down will help us in our day-to-day life of living in the kingdom. We still have that choice. Do I want to live in God's kingdom right now or in the world's kingdom right now? I have the choice every single day of which I want to live in. Christ said to us, the kingdom is here. It's now. It's near us. And you can choose to live in it or not. We looked at this at Sermon on the Mount. But here's now some ideas of, how does that look even more? And it so corresponds with Matthew 5. It's pretty cool. What was Israel's history with release? We've kind of talked about this already. First, I want to read you a passage in Deuteronomy of what he warned them about. He said, okay, I'm giving you this. And you're not going to celebrate till you get into the land. But I'm going to warn you. Before you get into the land, listen to me carefully. So hear this. For the Lord your God is bringing you into a good land. A land of brooks of water, of fountains and springs flowing forth. A land where you shall eat food without scarcity, in which you shall not lack anything. When you have eaten and are satisfied, you shall bless the Lord your God for the good land which he's given you. Beware, lest you forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments, his ordinances, and his statutes, which I'm commanding you today. Lest, when you have eaten and are satisfied, and have built good houses and lived in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply, and your silver and your gold multiply, and all that you have multiplies, then your heart becomes proud, and you forget the Lord your God who brought you out from the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. Otherwise, you may say in your heart, my power and the strength of my hand made me this wealth. But you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who is giving you power to make wealth, that he may confirm his covenant, which he swore to your fathers. So, what's Israel's history then on celebrating these releases, on the commitment to give themselves to him as his people, on their choices to take life or not, and life itself? First of all, they verbally committed to do everything in both Exodus and Deuteronomy that the Lord had commanded. They committed to doing that. Yes, we will do that. We like that idea. That's great. And yet they kept back from them the best. That's all the book of Malachi. Almost all the prophets, the minor prophets and major prophets. And they made rash vows. They began using their vows as transactions. We see that in Judges forever. What were their choices? God says at the end of Leviticus, you got a choice. I'm putting before you, and we see it in Deuteronomy, life and death. Which one do you want? I'll give you whatever you want. Which one would you like? They did prosper in the land. They got there and they prospered, and what happened? Exactly what he warned them about. Be careful if you prosper and you start, everything starts multiplying and multiplying. Be careful because you'll become idolaters at that point. You'll say, it's all about me. And that's exactly what they did. They became greedy. And because of that, instead of going back, and if they would have celebrated Sabbath, they would have remembered, God gave me all of this. If they would have celebrated right. If they would have celebrated the sabbatical year, they could not have accumulated more and more. If they would have celebrated Jubilee year, this couldn't have happened. And yet what we know is they didn't ever celebrate Jubilee year. For 490 years, they didn't celebrate sabbatical year. And what happened with the Sabbath? It became a thing of rules, obligations, and not a thing of the heart. Not, I'm playing with God, you must not do this. When God said, no. It's, come along with me. Put away your work, come along with me. And so they completely changed it and manipulated it for how they wanted it to look. And so because of not celebrating Sabbath, sabbatical year, and Jubilee year, they were able to go farther and farther and farther away from what was life. Do you see now the foundation of Sabbath? You see how it brings life rather than completely taking away life. And of course, what happens with them is that they experience all the deaths in Leviticus that he says will happen. If you choose death, you're going to get death, and deeper and deeper and deeper. I don't want to read through Amos, but one day read through Amos and see what happens with them. I mean, it says they begin to accumulate not just one house, but two houses. They have a summer house and they have a winter house. They have big houses and they have marble houses. And he says, you've accumulated all of this, and in that, you've exploited the poor because you've not celebrated any of these things. And so you've accumulated more and more, and then you keep saying, well, I can't take a rest now because I can't lose all of this. And so it just became more and more and more. And finally he says, if you do that, I have to take you out of the land because you're not caring for what I have given you, and the land now is completely depleted. And so we know that they go into exile for 490 years because they missed 70 sabbatical years. So 70 sabbatical years they didn't celebrate. And so he says, enough, the land is depleted because of you. And even today we still see the effects of them not giving the land sabbatical year for 70 years. Because what does Israel look like right now? It's still desert. He says he's going to restore it actually to look like the Garden of Eden, but right now it's not. It's better than it was. In 1948, it was only rock. It's better, but they're still completely desert there.
What was she suggesting Israel do today with the Palestinians?
Yeah,
I didn't get that.
Too.
She was like, after you read this, you'll know what Israel should do with the Palestinians. And I was like, I wasn't sure.
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm not sure what.
All right, no one knows.
Something about 1989.
They should kill them all.
what was it written?
After 2000,
can I read it?
I
it says, it will give you a lot of insight into what Israel should do in respect to land for the Palestinians and others in exchange for peace, and perhaps why in 1999 they were suffering a great drought. I didn't connect it either.
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
What are they going to tell the Palestinians? They're not gonna
but help. It can't revert back until they revert back,
yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Until they become a nation who seeks the Lord. They're not there. they are a secular state. And they say that. So, but boy, we could go way off on that. So what we know is that they didn't celebrate the Sabbath, the sabbatical year, and the Jubilee as they were put out. And it is amazing when you think about the fact that they never celebrated a Jubilee year ever. This coolest gift they never used. Ever. But here's the thing. Jubilee year will be celebrated. Right? And it will be celebrated when Christ comes back again. And it will be at the Feast of Booths, then it will begin this Jubilee year. And not just a year. It's going to be, this is what God's kingdom looks like, is the Jubilee year. So let's apply that to ourselves. That's where I really want to look at that. So in for us, we know that Jesus actually is our Jubilee. My whole intention for this class was we were going to actually, there is a Jewish Jubilee dance. And I had to teach it. And so I thought, that's it, we're doing that. We're going to go outside and we're going to do the Jubilee dance. Unfortunately, my VCR isn't working, so I couldn't get the tape to go and remind myself even how it went. I'm reading the instructions. Remember when we did this, Annie? Yeah. I'm reading the instructions. Mayim, 7-Up. What are those? I have no idea. I cannot remember that.
We learned that in gym class in high school.
Oh, well, most of us, the Hora. Right.
Oh, yeah.
Right, right. So a lot of us know some of those. I'm still working on that. We may do that next week or not. Don't know. If you get an email that says wear gym shoes, then we're going to do that. You know what? I even looked for, you know how usually you can look up a song and then you can at least play some of it? Not this one. Because it's a messianic song. I mean, it's actually called the Year of Jubilee. That's what it's called. What? Who?
Michelle?
I'm sure she wouldn't. I'm sure she wouldn't know. Most, the only people who ever do these anymore are messianic congregations. And that's actually what this tape is a messianic congregation doing this. But I may still get. Anyway.
Okay.
If, yes.
So I'm looking at this application section.
Yeah.
Right? I guess, I don't know. Like, when you look through the fact that it was ecological, economical, sociological, spiritual, like, how does just applying it to yourself, do you know what I mean? Like, I'm just thinking, I don't know.
If everybody's not doing it, how does
right.
one person do it?
Right. Okay, let's talk about that. Let's go through and see, first of all, what it means individually, but then how it spreads. First of all, let's remember, we do not live in a theocracy. We do not live how the Israelites lived, right? We don't live in a community that everyone says, oh, let's all do what God says to do, right? We don't even live in a Christian community anymore or in a Christian nation. So, yeah, it's going to look a lot different. It's not going to be effective throughout. But does that mean that we don't do it at all? It does mean, I do believe, that God says, it's your choice. In Christ, I've given you freedom, but Jesus is your Jubilee. Are you celebrating it at all? Because it doesn't affect, because you don't live in a theocracy, does it mean that you don't celebrate Jesus as the Jubilee, that you don't have freedom? I don't think so. I do think that we have a choice and a gift to be able to celebrate it in some ways. Let's look at how we can do that. So Jesus said that he actually quotes Isaiah saying he is the year of release. He is the one who gives freedom and to all those who are in bondage. And they are, of course, amazed because they know what he's talking about. And here's the thing. They know what he's talking about, and they also know they've never even celebrated it. So it's almost like we don't even want to go there. And this is what they're going to say. We don't have the luxury of doing this. How could we possibly do this? And so they would have all sorts of excuses of why they wouldn't, let alone the fact that he is it. So, but if he is our Jubilee, if he is actually saying, in me, you can live Jubilee life, then do we not have that invitation to live within that realm? If that's the kingdom of God, then there's an invitation for us to live in that. So in living in that, what's going to happen is we're going to say, yes, I would like my heart transformed. I would like my mind transformed. I would like all of these things transformed. If I'm committing, as Romans says, I beseech you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to give your body as a living and holy sacrifice, which is your reasonable service. It's just reasonable to commit your life to let him use it as you want. If that's true, then we do celebrate the Jubilee by living in that kind of a lifestyle. But first of all, we transform our hearts to be toward God. So, am I willing to trust God that he will give me what I need? And that what he gives me is what I need. We've talked about this a lot, about everything being grace. But am I willing to trust that everybody is us, that they're not an enemy? This is how I live Jubilee, that I actually believe that you and you and my neighbor and whoever it is not my enemy or my rival or my threat, right? That's going to change how I live, isn't it? If I see that, if I'm living in Jubilee, knowing that we're all the same, that what I have is a gift from God, and that I am actually supposed to be sharing it so that everyone has that, then I'm looking at people differently as well.
You're looking for repayment. You know, you don't
right.
have to cancel the debt because you're not
right,
holding
right, because I'm not
it
holding it. Right, exactly.
How do you apply that? I was thinking this week because I was saying some of our staff was like, we will do cross-referrals to another practice for the good of the patient.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to understand, they are our competition. And then later I got really convicted because I was like, God has blessed you so much. Mm-hmm. Why are you looking at
yeah. So why do you have your practice, Jen? Why is your practice Thrive Ever? Because you have worked so well and because
no,
you're better than your competitors?
No, if you've got it totally
yeah.
given it favor and blessing.
Right.
So I guess the question is, yeah, I mean, I believe that conviction was completely from the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Wrestling all the time
it
out
is.
Of one world into the next.
It
I
is.
I guess there
it
is no competition
yeah.
when, you,
yep.
when you live in the
yep.
kingdom.
How
right.
that, and then I guess the practical thing is, Lord, do I, am I a Christian businesswoman that operates so differently than and trust you to provide, even if it's not making sense according to
yep.
every other principle?
What about business? Hobby Lobby? Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
Closed on Sundays. Completely against what this world is about.
So when one practice is trying to like woo your employees away unethically, you just kind of let it happen?
What would you do in Jubilee?
You would set the deck. You wouldn't.
Who's responsible? If I go back and believe everything, that God's responsible for my destiny, then how do I look at all of those things in my life? Because that's just one area. But that happens in all of our areas of our lives, right?
Yeah.
And when we start thinking like the world, then we say, but I've got to get life for myself. I got to do it the way the world does it, because that's how the world works.
And they will continue to
and
do
they
it.
And they will continue to
that,
do it.
That won't change, but we can change.
And here's the thing. God says, you have the choice. If you want to live in the world the way the world lives,
yeah.
I'll let you live that way. And I'll let you live by those rules.
Yeah, I was going to say, not very
yeah.
restful.
No.
And then it becomes,
no.
we come under those principles.
Exactly. And this is what he's saying is, I have life for you in this way. It completely frees you from worrying about, what's the other guy doing? But it requires trust in God.
It was funny, this past Sunday I was, you know, doing the Sabbath thing, and we've been at the zoo, came back, I'm laying on this hammock, and my neighbor next door goes, are you pregnant? I'm like, no. She's like, so why are you resting? She's like, why are you just laying there resting? Well, okay. So the interesting thing, I'm like, because I'm enjoying my daughter and my kids and I'm enjoying the day. So like an hour later, I was like, totally don't feel like making dinner. Wonder what's going to happen for dinner. I'm like, oh, wonder what's going to happen. How can I make this happen but not really make it happen? She shows up, this person was like chiding me with this whole platter of food.
Oh my gosh.
She was like
the wealth of the
I love it. Yes. Yes.
And it was almost like she couldn't help but be part of it. Like, it looked so good.
I love it.
Yeah, it was really
funny.
I love it. But I was like trying to think, because I'm a big picture person, and I do like to think systemically. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? And so my thing is, like, how do we get our country, you know, how do we, like, totally forgive debt and, like, help these nations and blah, blah, blah? And I have to remember that it is contagious one
right.
person at a time. Mm-hmm.
It
know?
Is.
And, like, people are like, okay, even though I can't do it, I'll
right,
do
see?
It.
And that, and I think this is what we forget. We forget that, again, if God is giving us a good gift and we're enjoying his good gift, other people see that. That's the reflection he wants us to be showing on Sabbath is, oh, that's kind of cool. And it is not up to us to say, you got to do this, right? Our enthusiasm might boil over to that, but then it's our enthusiasm rather than, you got to do this, you got to do this. And so our individual trust in God does overflow into what's going on in the world. So I think that's a really, really great example. It is funny that, now we went to a restaurant on Sunday, and Bill said, okay, it's Sunday, so they have a special menu, and it's rested steak menu. I said, say that again? Rested steak menu, because it's Sunday. I don't know. They never explained it.
Is it like aged beef or something?
Did you get it?
No, I didn't. It was too expensive. It was like $40. but I just thought, anyway, it's interesting. So
it's microwave leftovers. At
$40. Here's what I want us to do. I want us to set aside our but, and go, these are gifts from God. How can I just take up one of these and allow it to transform a part of my life and see what God will do with that? Rather than, yeah, but, well, no, we can't do that. Set those aside, which is what we do in Jubilee. We set all those ideas of how we know life works and say, you know what, God, you actually do know how life works. You do know better than I. So I'm going to trust you for one piece here. So it transforms our thinking. So allow God to transform your thinking about, let's take a Sabbath. I'm not going to worry about what has happened in the past or what happens in the future, because God is taking care of it. He said, I'm going to give you exactly what I've always meant to give you. And no matter what somebody else does or what you've done in the past or what happens in the future, it's still me in control here, and it's still me going to give you what you need. Practice just that. Just being present in the moment and not having the worry dualistic mind. Just practice that and see what riches come out of that. Transform our actions. I think this is one of those that just could hugely transform us. All of them could, but this was the one that I thought, wow. Use a Sabbath to say, I forgive all the debts that anybody has to me. Now, of course, when we say debt, we think monetary, but I want you to think of what Matthew talks about. So every Sabbath, what if you said, today, no matter what has happened in the past week, I am not carrying that any longer for them. They have no burden for me. No matter what they did, and know that God has forgiven whatever you did in that past week. Now, how does it look going forward? Isn't that all of a sudden it's like, don't you feel just so relieved when you know, when you have a friend who really never carries any kind of malice at all toward you? You know, somebody who just like, oh, no, man, no. For me, Betty was this person. She just didn't carry that with people. And it was so freeing to have a relationship like that. Just, I was never worried. Like, I knew I'd make mistakes, and I knew I would offend, and I knew I would, you know, I would get angry or something, and I knew that it would never be carried over to the next day. My grandmother was like that, and I lived with my grandmother for most of my life, and so when I would wake up in the morning, I knew that no matter what had happened the night before, no matter how I had offended her or she had offended me, she was like, what are you talking about? That is how we live Jubilee in the Sabbath. Now, how does that make you look different in the week to come? How does Sabbath feel completely different? I have no need to get back at anyone. I have no need to get what I deserve from somebody else. Now Sabbath looks really free, doesn't it? And so relationships look completely different. able to set your captives free, which really has the same thing, flavor to it. Who are my captives? Those I've not forgiven. I've kept them in bondage to unforgiveness. I've kept other people in bondage by my expectations. And I've kept people I use for just my purposes. Now, let's just take that one. How does that look then when I no longer keep anyone in bondage with expectations? How does that look? Just for a day.
Well, you don't get disappointed if you don't expect something
right.
from them and they don't deliver what you're expecting.
Right. What about for them?
And yeah, they can always sense if they're not quite doing something they should be doing, but they don't know what they're supposed to be doing or saying. Or
so whatever. Now, what does your relationship look like for that day?
Easy.
Yeah, easy.
You're able to enjoy them.
Absolutely able to enjoy them. All of a sudden, it's, wow, it doesn't matter what you've done. And it doesn't matter what I've done. And I no longer have this need to control, I just let it go.
Well, and it's a gift you give yourself.
Yes, it's huge. And that's what God says. I know it's healthy for you. This is really a good thing.
I mean, if it's so good and so freeing, what the heck are we doing?
Because we're human. Like last week, I felt very excluded about something. And I wasn't the only one that felt that way. And so then there was a lot of this going on. I held on to that for 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
And for 2 days, I was cranky and miserable.
Yep.
And John would call me, are you over it yet? And guess what? And then I started it, and so it affected everyone who
yes.
touched me.
Yes.
I was like, man. And then when I finally got over it, then you look back and you think, that was really silly.
Yes.
It's a waste
yes.
of time.
And
yes.
you waste that time, you waste that energy. And then you have mean thoughts and barriers.
Yep.
It's not good.
Yep, it isn't.
But
for
we don't learn.
No, we don't.
I might be mad.
But here's what God is doing. He keeps inviting us. Every week he invites us. Would you like to just experience this once? And then you experience once and he says again, how about, would you like to experience it again? And then the third week, would you like to experience again? Just one of these things. Can you imagine just one of these things experiencing week after week after week until it becomes, what happens?
Mm-hmm.
It becomes like, this is part of me. This is natural. This is what God is getting at with Jubilee. He says, this is actually what I have for you. This is the kind of life I have for you. And I'm inviting you every week, experience a little of it. Experience a little of it. Because when you begin to experience, you're going to begin to really want it. Rather than that transactional life that we really just default to, right? It is our default because it's what we live in. It's what we have nurtured within us for however many years we've been on this earth. But he again continues to give us the invitation over and over again. Use it. Use it. Use this. You know, I'm almost beginning to feel like maybe I should use some of these things. And just enjoy.
Take that.
Yeah.
I love
quilts. So, setting our captives free. Able to return to living in the land. Well, what's our land? It's God's kingdom. It's living in the realm of Jubilee in God's kingdom. Where I receive all of life from him. I know it's from him. It's not from my hands. Where I trust that his ways are very good. If I'm living in God's kingdom and whatever comes my way, I know that it's a very good thing from him. And we could go into so much more of that if we would have done the last part. But I think we know pretty much what we're talking about there. Where I enjoy resting alongside of him, experience his creative work, playing with God. I really like that phrase because I think it helps us to understand. And it is, when we use the word playing, it's this free, like a kid, right? How often, how many of you play? You try. That's good. That's good. And you know, even as a kid, this is what happened to me on the Sabbath. Not only did I have all these spiritual warfares, so I said to God, so God, I want to enjoy you. What is it that I enjoy about you and creativity? What kinds of activities I came up with? This is really sad. I cannot think of one thing that I enjoy that isn't work. Not one. Everything I thought of is work. And then I had to think, okay, so what's wrong with that picture? And can I see what I enjoy then as not work? Can I? So I thought, well, I enjoy bike riding. I'm gonna ride my bike. But what's at the back of my mind? What did I tell you about I was going to do this year? Yep. Because I said, I have a goal of 500 miles. So I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to just bike ride. But could I just bike ride? No. I'm like, how many miles am I going to get? Right. And that's exactly. That's exactly what it is. I know.
You really want to diet, but then you survive.
Right. Well, I'll fast. Yes. This is really sad. If I'm living in his kingdom, if I'm returning to the land, then I'm returning to what God's given me as a gift. Just enjoy it as a gift. And even as I'm biking, I'm going, I can feel myself like, gotta go. Oh, wait, this is a gift. I mean, I'm literally, like, second to second, oh, it's a gift. Take it in, Joe. You don't have to go fast. You don't have to get there faster. You don't have to check your watch. I mean, I know. I mean, that's exactly what has to happen. And I can't tell my odometer. I can't change the odometer. It's the only thing you can't change.
Interesting.
So it's almost like I have to take it off.
Yeah. Interesting.
To be able to
free it.
So yeah, yeah. On the lease, a release. Yeah, yes. So again, ingrained this transactional living. This, I am worth what I produce. And I don't produce much, so if I produce 500 miles on my bike, I've produced, you know, something. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the craziest way to think, but it really is where we live. And God says, how about if you come live where I live? You want to do that with me for just one day? I've heard people say, if you can't do it for a day, can you do it for an hour? Can you try to Sabbath for a half a day?
Which is kind of sabbatical. You've got 3 months, right?
Yes. Yeah. So it's, well, yes. And so God is inviting us again. Take one of these things and experience it. I've got this huge plethora of great, very good Eden life for you to experience. Take one of them and experience them. And lastly, able to address the imbalance of rich and poor. If God has placed in my path someone that's in need, this is an invitation. Jubilee. Share it. I remember Sherilyn, one of the first refugees she had. I remember, I think of one of your refugees, I can't remember which one it was, liked your dish towels. Do you remember this?
Yeah, the
African woman. Yeah. And she was like, oh, those are nice dish towels. And of course, she had nothing. And Sherilyn felt like, why do I have dish towels to give to her? Why do I have an extra coat to give to her? That is this invitation
of dish towels. That's what's ridiculous.
Yes.
I was like, I can't not give these.
I have a drawer full of them. Yes, exactly. And so this, wow, God gives me these opportunities to be able to share with Jubilee. So doesn't mean that we have to go to the government and start saying, government, you need to do this. No, I really think as a believer who is in the midst of the world, I think it starts with what God puts right in front of us, whatever that may be. And for each one of us, it may be very different. But it starts there.
But I also think
it means putting yourself in places.
Yes, I
do.
You
know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
I think you could protect your life from ever coming into contact with anyone who would need
it. I absolutely agree. Yeah. I absolutely agree. The funny thing is, God is pretty faithful about bringing that,
yeah.
But we also are very good at not seeing it.
Yeah.
I do think, even thinking about practicing Jubilee, our eyes begin to be opened. Oh, there are needs around me. There are all sorts of needs God puts in front of me. To begin those, and if there are opportunities to be bigger, to be in a place of greater need, we've got all sorts of opportunities here, mm-hmm. A million opportunities. It is not, though, here's an obligation I have. Mm-hmm. And this is a real problem. This is why social justice has gotten a bad name in the churches, because it became an obligation, and that's what we have to do. Whereas God says, I have this invitation for you to be living in Jubilee. And now justice looks different, doesn't it? And now when we look at what does the Lord require of you but to do justice, mm-hmm. It's this, enjoy it with me. Come along with me. I have this invitation to have a Jubilee year. And now it looks completely different for that. Mm-hmm. But not just the sharing, but the not judging. And this, I think, gets down to really tough places, particularly in a place like DuPage County. I think this is a really tough place for us to say, in Jubilee, I have to admit to the truth that everything I have is because God gave it to me. And so I can't say that Scott Huber is any different than I am. Mm-hmm. That he's a homeless person in Naperville. By choice.
The only homeless person.
The most famous.
The most famous one, yes. But again, I can't say, well, they didn't work for this, and I did. If I really understand and really allow an experience of Jubilee, I think one of these things, and we haven't even scratched the surface on this, but I wanted to give you some points to go, even one of these things, if I start to experience it, I think I will begin to understand what Jesus meant when he said, my burden is easy. My yoke is light. This is not a burden and a hardship. It's a joy for you to receive what I have for you in this kingdom life, in this Jubilee life. And so this beautiful picture of Jubilee is this invitation to experience what he's actually restoring us to. Because that's what we're going to be living in. And transforming our attitude. I am then able to celebrate that I belong to God. I'm able to celebrate that everything I have is given to me by God. I'm able to receive everything as his working to restore me to the very good. And I'm able to serve others joyously with the priestly invitation. Release is available. Liberty throughout the land. Draw near. And so if I'm living in Jubilee, here's how I'm going to end. If worship, remember, Leviticus is the book of worship. If worship is about honoring the one who came to give us peace and rest, and yet we refuse to receive peace and rest, how is it that we're able to fulfill our priestly duty of calling others to come near to peace and rest? They don't fit together. It's an oxymoron to never celebrate and live in the Jubilee and say, I'm a priest who's inviting everybody to this. That's what worship is. I live there so that it just comes out and says, hey, join me. This is fun. And Sherilyn, just by that little example, she didn't even have to say to her neighbor, oh, well, sit down. Let me explain to you what Jubilee Year is about, right? She didn't have to do that. Eternity has been planted in our hearts. We know life and rest when we see it. And so living in Jubilee life will have so many more repercussions that we ever could imagine. Like Kim said, when I'm not living Jubilee, when I'm living, like holding on to that, everybody else is affected then, right? Why is it then not the opposite? When I'm living Jubilee, everyone else is affected.
And you know what I think is interesting in the days that we're living in, this is like in our carnal minds to say, well, this would be the worst time to rest.
Right. Mm-hmm.
This would be the absolute worst time because of everything in the economy. Mm-hmm. And wouldn't it be just like God if he placed that on us to learn how to rest and allow him to provide so that it would be an invitation for those that are...
Yep.
And I'm thinking if we use this gift that we've been given and it's part of our heritage, then our children will see it as something desirable.
Exactly.
Whereas if you give this quilt to Lissa, she's never even seen it before. Right. It will have no meaning to
right.
her at
exactly.
all.
Exactly.
Versus, you know, something
right.
you've inherited, your, you know, grandma's ratty old bowl, but it
right.
has such a treasure to you
right.
because, oh, she used it every day to make me cookies. And,
yes.
You know, versus what was hidden away and
yeah.
used.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Does anyone have any thoughts and ideas about how this transforms how they live, how they do Sabbath? Pam, does this give you a little bit better idea of what Sabbath looks like then?
Yeah.
So, again, Jesus never gives us a prescription. Well, this is what you should do on Sabbath. What he gives us is these precepts of Jubilee so that it is an internal thing that comes out in what we do.
He really is inviting us to know him and to rest in him and enjoy him.
Yep.
And is that
enough? Yeah.
And you know, one thing that I just wrote down here is my expectations of others when you said that about freeing people from that bondage. That's huge.
That's huge.
Because I always have those things for my boys. Are you doing what you're supposed to be doing?
Yep.
Sunday would be a good day to just say, I'm just going to enjoy you and we'll talk about it tomorrow.
Yep. 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 And what happens is it becomes a practice more and more. So pretty soon, we don't hold people to our expectations, which, man, makes a life of complete freedom. If I don't have to live up to other people's expectations, I think I've told you this before. I almost don't want to put this on tape. Because it's hard. It's sad.